was like, well, great. And yeah, so I didn't have enough left. So it was like, okay, what else do I have in my inventory that I can use instead of this? But that was a bit of a bummer. But, you know, we got past it. It's fine.
That's you are a lot more patient than I think I would. Anytime I drop anything on the ground, even if it's something simple, I, like, lose my shit. So that is impressive.
Well, I have my moments, too. So I won't give you too much credit on that.
Hey, y'all. This week on Bus Ride Talks, craftsman, gamer, and scenic carpenter Sam Martin takes us back to the charms of Baltimore, talking us through the process of making glass art, the challenges of changing up your routine, designing over Zoom, and the vast expansiveness of Maryland's many, many sides. Let's get to it.
Hi, Sam. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Davinia. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good to have you here. Glad that you're with us.
I'm happy to be here.
It's been... I knew you first through, like, your theater work, but now that you're with us and we get to talk about a couple other things, you're a scenic designer first, but you are also a craftsman, and I'm wondering, so I feel like that word has a lot of connotations to it. What does that mean for you? Like, what's your definition of that?
I think for me, like, craftsmanship, it comes down to, like, real hands-on work, if you will. Like, one thing I really love about woodworking and glasswork is that it's a very tactile medium, you know, whereas, like, printmaking, it's things you can hang up on walls and stuff like that, and it's incredible in its own right, but, like, there's something more weighty, if you will, like, to glass and woodwork that I really enjoy. Getting that to work with my hands and the fine detail of it and everything, so yeah, I think craftsmanship it's the things you're doing with your hands, I guess, if that makes sense.
No, that makes perfect sense. I think one of my questions too is, like, what's the difference in, like, woodworking and glass mediums than, like, painting or, like, fine art, you know, because they're both artistic endeavors, but I think, like you said, one is, like, super tactile, and also there's the equipment involved is different, the knowledge that you need to do these things is different. What to you is, like, different? Because I don't work in either of those, really. So it's interesting.
Well, I mean, space, for one, I think that's probably the biggest, right? Like, you know, a lot of my friends are, you know, and my brother included, graphic designers, printmakers and stuff. They can work on, on their computers for their drafting work. They can work just on a drafting table and things like that. Whereas I, you know, for a picture frame or a dice box that I make, I need three different kinds of stationary tools, a table saw, a miter saw, and then a table router. And then I need, you know, the wood burner to, like, do the detailing and everything. I need stains. I need to make sure there's proper ventilation and, like, an open enough room to where, like, you know, I don't pass out from breathing in these fumes.
Yeah.
if I can't find a respirator or something. And then for glasswork, the glasswork is more manageable. Like, right now, my workspace is in my dining room. Apologies to my roommates for not having the best eating space, but, you know, we're making it, we're getting through it. But yeah, I think it's the necessities that you need for it. There's a lot more to it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, there's, like, a whole, I think you just listed it out, right? At least, especially for woodworking, there's a whole list of equipment that you have to find the resource for to use it and then know how to use it. How did you get into that?
I mean, I had always really, so my father did a lot of, like, the home improvement stuff at our house and everything. And I remember, like, at a younger age helping him with that sort of stuff. So I'd always kind of, like, I was familiar around power tools and things like that. But it wasn't until going to Towson and working in the scene shop and doing, you know, the stagecraft course that I really got to, you know, sink my teeth into how, like, the little nuances that each of these tools have. And, you know, if I want one thing to happen with a tool, like, I've got to be able to position the blade in just the right way that it makes, you know, the right cut to get the shape you need for it or something like that. And then it's like with a table router or something like that, you find the right bit to get you the right shape and curvature for the piece that you're working on or something like that. You know, so it's all those years of practice that came into it, I guess. help me get to where I am now with it.
Like, how much control do you feel like you have over the pieces of art that you get to create when it's, like, you're relying on, like, tools in that way? Like, obviously, you know them well enough to sculpt, but also, wood's a tricky thing. Glass is a tricky thing. How does that work?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's all about, it's all about just trial and error, I think, of you know, really figuring out the best methods to get that control over it. Because, like, you know, glass you get in, like, 1-foot by 1-foot sheets, right? And, you know, you might need this little teeny tiny thing, but if it's a very specific shape or look to it, the way you score the glass and then break it from the sheet, if it's not broken in just the right way, the piece snaps in half and you got to start all over again.
Right.
Right. So it's just kind of figuring out what works. And, you know, I'm definitely self-taught, but now since I'm trying to, like, get better at it, I'm doing more and more research into it. You know, going back, if you will, and sort of, taking it from there. And so there's a lot of, like, techniques and resources online. And then I also follow a number of glass artists on Instagram who, like, they have had no problems. If I'm like, hey, how do I do this thing? You know? So that's been pretty great.
Oh, that's really nice. So there's, I mean, I think all different art forms have, like, different sets of communities. So there's, like, different communities for you to go to, other glass artists, other woodworking artists that you share this with. That's really neat.
Yeah. With the woodworking too, like, so I'm still working at Center Stage as a scenic carpenter, and it's nice to have the group of people I'm with, because it's people I can go to. Just like with glass, I'm like, hey, is this a good stain to use? What finish should I use for this? You know, that sort of deal. So that's been pretty cool.
Yeah, you mentioned something about breaking glass too, and how if you don't snap it the right way, the pieces that you're making could just shatter. I think that's a question that I have, in that, like, all art forms are different levels, I think, of forgiving in terms of when you make mistakes, but are wood and glass forgiving mediums or not exactly?
I mean, no, I don't see them as forgiving. Like, with wood, it's one of those things, if I mess up on something, yeah, right? Like, I'll have to start over on it. Or if it's, like, down to the last piece, I'll do what I can to make it work. A lot of times I like to take certain glass pieces and put them in a wood frame. And then, like, if a piece of wood is not the right size or something like that, it's like maybe I scale down the glass piece in certain spots or something like that. But, you know, and it's I would say it's forgiving in the sense, as long as you have the materials to go back. But it's just all about that forethought to be able to know how much you need based on, you know, how often these mess ups happen or something like that.
Okay. That's a little easier or a little less terrifying than what I thought it was. You know, and I think when I'm not someone who works with materials that often, I don't work in any medium that's, like, really a tactile medium. So I think they all terrify me, because I'm just like, this, you know, this stuff is expensive. Equipment's expensive. Yeah. Materials are expensive. And I'm like, what if you, if something goes wrong, you just have to, like, start from scratch. So that eases my mind a little bit.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'll admit there have been those moments where it's like, I'll have, like, a smaller piece of glass. And then, like, for example, I made a cow skull for my brother for his birthday and had this really cool textured horn, like, brown piece that I was using for the horns. And then one of them broke. Oh, and I was like, well, great. And yeah, so I didn't have enough left. So it was like, okay, what else do I have in my inventory that I can use instead of this? But that was a bit of a bummer. But, you know, we got past it. It's fine.
That's you are a lot more patient than I think I would. Anytime I drop anything on the ground, even if it's something simple, I, like, lose my shit. So that is impressive.
Well, I have my moments too. So I will not give you too much credit on that.
I never really worked with glass in any way. What is involved? Like, how do you make a glass piece, and what's your process for that?
Okay, so, you know, it starts with, I guess, your subject matter, right? For me, it's a lot of real nerd shit that I enjoy, you know, in video games and anime and stuff. And so I take that, and I'll draft out a pattern. And normally it's you know, you want to be able to segment it in such a way that it's manageable. It's like, the harder pieces are like pieces that have more of a 90 degree shape to it or bend. Like straighter pieces are very easy to do. But so you start with drafting it out and then you print it out. And from there you take your glass, you have like a scoring tool, which is basically like a really teeny tiny pizza cutter. and it leaves a scoring mark in the glass. And then there's a ball end on the other end of the scoring and you sort of tap the underside of it. And that sort of fractures the glass for it to snap apart. And so from there you have a sharp edge to it. And like the edge, it's a little bigger. Oh, I should have mentioned that you cut out each individual piece of the pattern and then you trace that with a Sharpie on the glass. There's that important part. And then after you snap the glass, you put it to a grindstone. And you file down the edge to the shape that you need it. And, like, you know, sometimes I like to go a little wider for the pieces that I score and break. So that way it's slightly more forgiving and I can shape it a little easier. Because if you go too far in, then, that's it, you know, when it comes to filing it down. And so once you have all your pieces filed and, like, the shape made that you want, you take there's a copper foil that's about a quarter of an inch wide, and you line each piece of glass that you score and grind and everything, you line each piece with this foil. And so there's like an edge on the front, the back end, and the whole edge of it. And then you assemble it, and then you solder it all together. It's a
long process.
I would say on average... so I did for my friend, I did the D&D Dragon Ampersand for his birthday, and that piece took me about 14 hours to make.
Okay, so this is, I mean, obviously it's labor intensive, but it's time intensive too.
It is. Mm-hmm.
And it's, it also sounds like there's a bit of like delicacy to it, right? I imagine you can't just go like hammering around with what you're doing, especially with the glass.
Yeah, absolutely.
that is incredible.
Yeah, it's a lot. I've absolutely had to buy a back brace for it. because otherwise I don't know, be in physical therapy for weeks on end or something like that, yeah. I guess. Because hunched over for hours on end doing one thing after another, it is very, like, the labor of it alone can be very taxing. Especially with, in part with, like, working, you know, as a scenic carpenter too, and all the labor intensive stuff that goes into that. So it's been a lot of figuring out how to take care of myself also. So that way I can effectively create and keep creating.
Yeah. And tell me a little bit about the scenic work that you do. So I know you work at Baltimore Center Stage as a scenic carpenter. You did some scenic design as well.
I did. Yeah. I've dabbled in that. It was a lot. So after graduating Towson, like, I tried my hand at being a TD, and that was kind of a mess. So it was a lot of, like, really having to get myself grounded in what I'm comfortable with first and then coming back to it. And so it was around, like, 2019, I think, that, like, mid-2019, I was like, yeah, okay, I think I'm good to start getting back into scenic design again. And so I did Mood River Buffalo for Spotlighters Theater and then Safe Space for Single Carrot Theater. And then COVID hit. So unfortunately, and I was also a part of designing the Young Playwrights Festival at Center Stage as well.
Oh, that's
and
great.
Then that the COVID hit there, and so that went to a whole online thing. And so that was fun in figuring out how to do like Zoom backgrounds and things like that. There was a moment where there's an app called Snapcam. I think that's the name of it, but it basically you create Snapchat filters.
Oh.
And it was a whole thing of like, we briefly experimented with that. But there was a lot more stuff that went into it and it wasn't registering with certain cameras and things like that. So that was tossed, but it was like, it's interesting, right? Because, you know, you would think that it's just like certain backgrounds thrown up and that's it. But like, there was a moment where there was, like people in a car and it was a thing of me having to figure out like how to get the, like, it was, I remember my phrasing in these Google searches had to be very specific on things. It was like, interior of the back end of a car or something like that to get the seats and whatnot, or like a interior driver's seat of a vehicle, you know, stuff like that. So it was a fun little like mental problem solving thing with that, of getting the right phrasing to find the images.
Yeah, I think the Zoom scenic design that I've been able to see, like scenic design in general, is always kind of, it blows my mind a little bit, right? Because they just look at a thing, they talk with the director, and then they're like, here's what I imagine. And the models that scenic designers can make are so thorough and so beautiful. And they're just these little miniature things. And then you can make it into a real thing. It's crazy.
Yep, I love it.
For Zoom scenic design, like you said, there's backgrounds, there's all of these filters and things that you can do, but you also have to navigate what people's computers can do. And I think to me, that would be the most frustrating thing, because you can have an image, you can find the thing that you think is the perfect thing, but if it doesn't work on someone's computer, then it just doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it can get, and I mean, not only that, but then also, if you're trying to like do green screen or something like that, the backgrounds of what you have, it generally has to be a very neutral thing, or else it doesn't show up. Like, I've tried it with what's behind me here, and there's just so much color, and it's so busy behind it, that it's like, I've had to tape up bed sheets behind me and stuff like that to make it work, you know? And so, like, and that's a whole thing about it. People's lighting in their, in their apartments, in bedrooms and stuff like that, can have an impact on it as well. So, like, I had to work with a lighting designer for YPF on, like, all right, what's the sweet spot for these backgrounds and this lighting to make sure that everything shows up that we need? And, you know, it's and it always doesn't work 100% of the time or have the right impact that you want. But, like, I think that's kind of the fun of it. You know what I mean? It's still being alive in that sense of, like, it's not always going to be perfect, but, like, it's theater. It's fun. So
it's not supposed to be perfect.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's nice to be able to maintain that a little bit. It's it's good to hear that you were able to do some Zoom work. I think I am most grateful to designers for being willing to take their work online, because it's just so not the medium that they trained for, worked for.
Right.
In any sort of way, but they've done it with so much, you know, I haven't met a designer who hasn't been at least a little bit excited by it. Frustrated for sure, but.
You know, there's a learning curve to it. Yeah. And that's the whole thing. It's like, and I think that's the beauty of theater, right? Is its level of adaptability, of being able to overcome the obstacles that are thrown at us, and working with it and rolling with it. And I think, you know, and it's happened, and it's great.
We keep going. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to go back to what you said, because I think it's super important. And it's funny, because I think, you know, most of the guests that we've talked to have really come back to this idea of taking care of yourself. And with you working in such tactile mediums, you know, both in carpentry and in, like, your art forms, and there's really no difference between the two, how have you been making sure that you're taking care of yourself, especially, you know, right now?
Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, it's, so I've been dealing with a lot of really bad back pain and joint pain and stuff like that. And so for me, like, I found this, like, quick yoga flow thing, like, online. It was sort of cobbled together by certain online, like, different online resources, and it's like maybe a 30-40 minute process just to go through one round. And so I'll generally wake up, and that'll be like the first thing I'll do, you know. I'll put on some yoga meditative music I found, like a playlist I found on Spotify, and then just kind of go through these motions for a bit. And it's helped a lot. I've been doing it for about 2 months now, and I'm like, wow, okay, that's awesome. You know, it's one of those things of, like, I feel like people always are like, oh, I want to take care of myself. But it's like, then they use, like, say, time or something like that as a reason why they can't. But it's like, you know, if you find the time to do it, it only helps yourself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a big one. Just stretching in general, I think, is the most important thing. Fortunately, like, I don't trust public transit right now. For obvious reasons. So, unfortunately, I live close enough to Center Stage that it's only like a 20 to 30 minute bike ride for me. And so that's been my main means of transportation since we went back to Center Stage in December. So, and I've been cycling to work since, you know, my boss is awesome enough to give me rides when it's raining out and things like that when he can. So that helps. But besides that, I'm pedaling to work there and back every day.
That's fun. I used to do, like, biking after work as, like, a form of exercise. And I think, especially right now, in the place that I live, there's just, like, a lot of nice trails around. So I want to get back into it. Mm-hmm. It's just a thing that it's nice, I think, when it's built into your sort of schedule. Although I can't imagine biking when it's cold outside. But I can't do anything when it's cold outside. I feel like a salamander in lots of ways.
I
love the sun.
I have a friend from Texas who would relate to that.
See? I get them. I really do. I can't. I'm sorry, it's cold. I'm hibernating.
I hear that. No, well, and that's the thing, too. So, like, fortunately, my brother snowboards, so he lent me a whole bunch of his gear to bundle up for when that happened. Got a ski, like, the goggles, the helmet, and everything. Yeah. And also, like, it's sort of a silver lining to having to wear face masks, too, is that because it keeps your face covered. Mm-hmm. from getting cold and everything. So that's been really nice.
That was a big help in the winter. Mm-hmm. I think winter is usually, I'm just full of complaints. So that was one less complaint for me. Yeah. That's great.
Right.
No, I think the stretching thing really resonates with me because I have trouble keeping, like, physically active, even mm-hmm. with all the things I do, because it's just not that interesting to me. Like, I like walking. Sure. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
But I got into stretching too, and it is a thing that I've had to make time for in the morning. And it's really easy for me to not do it, is the thing. It's so easy to just be like, no, I need to go, like, get mm-hmm. online for work, or mm-hmm. like do this other thing, or take care of my cat.
Or, like, I'll lie in bed for another 15 minutes.
You know? I will definitely lie in bed for another 15 minutes, probably 30. It's a problem. I'm working on it.
One step at a time, you know?
Right? But it does, I don't know, there's something about just stretching your body and moving it feels very easy to do. You feel much better. I feel much better after I do mm-hmm, it. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like my body's, like, awake and ready to do things and is happy to do things. Yeah. And then I'm less annoyed at the end of the day when I'm, like, playing with my cat and rolling over the floor and doing all these random things.
And it's one of those things that feels, like, really daunting at first. Mm-hmm. Right. Of like, okay, what do I do? How do I go about it? Like, what stretches should I be doing? But it's like, once you figure that routine and rhythm out, then it just kind of falls. It just becomes a part of your day to day, you know? For sure. And it gets a lot easier with it of making the time for it and stuff.
I think adding a new thing to your schedule is always tricky, even when, especially right now, because routines are so important, changing it mm-hmm. for some reason just feels really daunting because it's like, can I add this new thing? How do I do it? And do I really want to? Even if you know that that's a thing that you want to do, change is just, it just messes with your mind a little bit. You're like, how do I fit it in?
Yeah, you know, I think about how, so, like, a lot of my glass work I had to do on my free time, of course, but it's always like, okay, how do I balance this? How do I fit this in mm-hmm. with fitting in? Because, you know, self-care is a very important thing to me. So it's like, am I making sure I have enough time to take care of myself too? And everything. It's a lot of, like, it's a lot of time management, you know? it's a whole thing. But it's like I said, once you get there, it just takes it, like, figuring it out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's getting over that daunting hurdle of trying to figure it out. But when you're there, you're there. And that's a good spot to be.
I think it helps. You just have to, like, meet yourself where you're at, too. At least that's what I've tried to apply to myself. It's like, okay, I can't add 30 minutes to my day because it's just not what I'm mentally capable of. But I can mm-hmm. take, like, 30 mm-hmm. seconds and just when I stand up from my desk, I'll do a little stretch or something like that or anything like that just to make it easier on myself. And that makes me feel better because then it's like, oh, I did do this. Even if I didn't spend, you know, more than 10 minutes on it, I still did it.
Exactly.
Now, you're Baltimore-based. Is that where you're from in the area? Have you always been Baltimore-based?
I'm a transplant. Exciting, right? I moved over to... So, originally, I'm from the Eastern Shore. Good old country area out on the waters of the Chesapeake.
I don't know anything about the Eastern Shore, to be honest. Like, I've gone out there, obviously, but I don't really know what it's like to be out there.
Sure. It's interesting. It's a bubble, to say the least. So my brother and I, we both went to Towson, all three mm-hmm. of my brothers did, myself included. And whenever we were meeting people out there, it was kind of like this game of, well, not so much a game, but, like, when people would ask where we're from, we would say Eastern Shore. And so it's like we start with Ocean City, right?
Okay.
And if they know where Ocean City is, we go to the next area, which is like maybe Salisbury or like somewhere in Sullivan County or something like that. And so if they know that spot, then we go a little further of being like, okay, we're from this county. If they know the county, then we'll go to the town and see where things land. Normally they get lost once we get to the county. So I'm from Caroline County originally in the town of Greensboro. And it's a very small place. I am so thankful that I did get off the shore, though. I think it's important for people to do that because it's very rural, very conservative, and just kind of walled off. Like, I think I mentioned it, like the shore definitely has this like living in a bubble sort of feeling, and it's gotten a lot better. However, there are still a lot of people out there who are very narrow-sighted, I'll say. Which, you know, is a big inhibitor on growth, I think. But, and so coming from the shore, coming out to Baltimore, I think was the best thing for me to do. Like I think about my growth from when I started in Towson, graduating from Towson, moving into the city. And it's just such this arc of learning, you know, diversifying my own experiences in life and meeting new people, new ideals, and just growing as a person, I think, and kind of understanding a little more about how things work in the world and my place in it and like how I can go about making the world a better place in my own communities and stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, that makes a lot of sense. I think one of the things my sister and I, when we did, used to drive out to Eastern Shore and so my sister went to school in Towson too. So that's an area that we're familiar with. We would spend time, like, going out to Eastern Shore in the area. And then we're also from, I think it's more southern Maryland. It's, like, Prince George's County, Maryland, and out by D.C. And we used to joke that, like, for some reason, Maryland is just, like, all 50 states in one. Like, you have, like, your eastern side that's, like, very coastal. We have the southern part of Maryland that acts very much like the southern states. If you go to, like, really northern Maryland, it's a lot like Northeast America. Mm-hmm. And then the western side just gets into, like, Middle America, West Coast territory. Mm-hmm. And it's just when you go to a different area, you just – when you travel around Maryland, it's such a different place from where you were. Even if it's, like, only, like, 20 miles down the road, for some reason you're just in, like, a whole new region so quickly.
No, it's wild. And like, you know, I'm about to turn 28 and it's one of those things of like, I would love to get out of the state and live somewhere else still, but it's like Baltimore has been such a good enough spot for me to be living because it's so vastly different from the Eastern Shore and everything I grew up with, you know, pickup trucks are not the majority of vehicles driven around here and things like that. So it's Maryland is very unique in that sense, that it's like you've got beaches on one side, you have the Appalachian Mountains on the other, and in between is this whole spread of different communities and places to visit.
Yeah, I think I have a hard time, because I think for a while, and I left the state for a year, and then I came back, but I think when I consider like where I want to settle down, it's still here, because there's just, like you said, there's just so much you can do in one state that it's a little tricky to leave sometimes for me at least. It's a little tricky to think about leaving.
Absolutely. No, I think for me, I would always come back to Maryland, I think, at some point. But I feel like I've been around enough to know that there's some really cool spots out there. Like I am very partial to my mountains. I like some good mountains. So like, you know, I've always seen a huge appeal in like Pacific Northwest or up in New England or something like that. I think it'd be fun to just hang out there for a bit out in the woods. It's interesting too, in a road trip, I noticed that, in a road trip that my brother and a friend and I did up to New England one year, I noticed that it's like, there are just the numbers of craftsmen up there, like, increased drastically, because I guess it's one of those things of like you're living kind of out in the middle of the woods, so it's not really a whole lot else to do, I guess.
Well, and also space is one of the things you mentioned, and if you're out in the woods, there's lots of space.
Right? You can go and chop down a tree, build your own workshop with it or something like that. But
that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So you seem like you might be an outdoors person. That's another thing that I probably would ask you about. It's like, what are the things you do that aren't woodworking and glassmaking?
I would say that I do enjoy a good hike. Unfortunately, not having a car, I can't really go on my own, but I've got friends who are always down for it. In the before times, I would get into a lot of climbing too and things like that.
That's hard. I can't.
It's a lot. That's yeah. a lot. fortunately, so the climbing gyms around here, they're very good at having levels to it, difficulty levels. Mm. They have very easy things that you can get started with and practice with, and then the levels gradually increase in difficulty to the point where there's a handhold the size of a pen or a quarter that people are pinching onto and somehow managing to scale an entire wall, like a spider or something like that. It's wild.
It's incredible. I think it's great to witness and watch. There was a period where my partner and I got really into watching athletic competition shows, and a lot of them are centered around climbing, and it was mind-boggling what people can hold onto and how far they can get themselves on the tiniest little spaces. It's crazy.
Honestly. Yeah. Yeah. Cycling too is now something I'm getting into, because I'm realizing that sure, I can just cycle to and from work, but if you take too long of a break, then the next time I'm going to work, I'm like, ooh, this is rough. I think my balance between outdoor and indoor activities is pretty even at this point, because gaming still is a huge part of my life and the things I'm into. I have a tremendous PlayStation community of very close friends, and we'll all get on and we'll either be playing the same multiplayer game or just playing our own thing and just, shooting the breeze the whole time or something like that.
That's great. And I know D&D is a big, it's a big part of what you do too.
Yes.
No,
yes.
I'm honestly, I'm a little afraid to ask, because I haven't known really what D&D is. But it's been around so long, and people have mentioned it around me so long, that I've been too afraid to ask people what it really is. Will you please finally release me from this burden?
Of course, of course. Thank you. So, Dungeons & Dragons is a tabletop role-playing game where, you have the Dungeon Master, who is essentially this world's god, and they can either go from a module of, a pre-written story and, a list of events, or they can make their own homebrew world, what my DM does. And so he essentially creates... DMing is one of the most daunting things ever. I'll stick with playing for right now, but my friend has created this world. He's created cities, communities, religions for it and things. And this whole backstory of lore of the battle of these gods in ancient times and things, and how that impacts the current world and whatnot. And then he focuses a lot on individual arcs of the characters and things, and how they all sort of weave in and tie together. So, and what's so fun about Dungeons and Dragons is its open-endedness. You could follow the quest if you wanted, sure. Or you could just get drunk in a tavern if you wanted to. You just kind of sit there and be like, I'm good. I'll have another round. And all of it is statistic based with dice rolling and character stats and things like that.
Yes,
so
I've heard of the dice.
There's a lot of math involved with it. And I remember playing my first game and being like, I have no idea what in the hell I'm doing right now. Because there's modifiers for very specific things. And then there's very specific actions you'll have to take based on what you do or don't do. And then, of course, there's the rest of your party to factor in on how all that goes. And so you have all these different characters who have, different intents, different... goals in mind, different alignments and allegiances and things like that. And if you accidentally cross someone, then that could be grounds for a fight right there or something like that. It can get very intense at moments too. Some days you'll go in not feeling it, but then other days, especially when it's a very, very role-playing driven session or something like that. Assuming the character and everything, it it can get to be very emotionally taxing too at times. Like there was a session where some really bad shit happened, and you know, at the end of it, it's like, where do we go from here? Like this one person kind of blamed themselves. My character has sort of taken the role of like, I don't want to say the glue that holds them all together, but he's kind of the one there for their friends and stuff like that. Trying to like, listen, like, yeah, this happened. It wasn't your fault, though. We can keep going, you know. That's just what monks do, I guess. They're very tranquil people in that sense.
I mean, it's the person that I know that you are, so.
Well, thanks. No, it's been an incredible experience. The current campaign I'm in right now, we've been playing for 3 years in October, I want to say.
That's a long time.
Yeah, and I mean, we've taken long pauses, just, like, last summer when COVID hit, our DM needed just a long break, just so, you know, he could take care of his own real-world stuff, and, figure out what's happening next in his life, and just kind of, writer's block can be a really difficult thing to overcome at times as well, like, okay, where do we go next in this storyline, you know? And so... Yeah, it's been a long-running campaign. I think it's going to end by the end of this year, but we'll see, because any one of the players could get caught up into some other stuff and draw it out much longer than it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. No, I was going to say, I think the thing that I can recognize within all of this, because that sounds expansive and amazing and complicated and complex in a really beautiful way, is the storytelling aspect of it, right? And that's true for like most games. That's why people love, you know, video games and all sorts of like tabletop games, is the story aspect of it. But this one is really, it's sort of a like choose your own adventure. You build a storyline as a community, and that's just amazing. I mean, that's devising.
And like, it's one of those things too of you like, so we finished my arc in my campaign, but then it's in the campaign, right? So, and it's one of those things of like, to stay engaged, like I've sort of come to create my own personal arcs for myself, or goals or something that my character would want that the DM never really essentially planned to write, but just sort of evolved into that, which I think is just one of the fascinating things about it, you know, that open-endedness I had mentioned, that you can take whatever you can go with whatever idea or anything that you want and run with it.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. So, I love that.
I highly recommend that anybody who hasn't tried D&D before, give it a go at one point or another.
We will take that recommendation though.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, speaking of gaming and community, I think you brought us a really amazing and unique organization this time around for this episode called Extra Life. Yes. And I want to give you a little bit of space to talk about that, and then I will go through sort of their like official spiel, but tell us who they are to you and why you chose them.
So Extra Life is really cool to me because of the fact that, well, A of all, I think not many people really associate gaming with charities. It's two things that like you don't really make a connection to. So it's one of those things where like, what was I going to say? It's one of those things where, you know, gamers can now have that opportunity and chance to give back. And there are a lot of other gaming charities out there as well. Extra Life is just one of the larger ones that, you know, can act as a gateway, if you will. And it's like with things like Twitch and Discord being such huge platforms that a lot of people have been able to create jobs out of. Extra Life is so cool in the sense that they can just have that donation tab up for their streams, and these thousands of people can come on, watch them, and then donate to it in that sense. And then, like, I have another friend of mine who runs a D&D campaign, and he always has an Extra Life link with that campaign as well. And so, I think it's just a tremendous opportunity for gamers to give back in that sense, and for other people, and for that platform to be used for charitable work.
Yeah, like you said, so Extra Life is really, it's just mixing gaming and gameplay and giving in a really amazing way, in that all of the gameplay is in support of folks, local Children's Miracle Network Hospital. And since 2008, Extra Life has raised over $70 million. Mm-hmm. And just through people's efforts and putting these links up, like you said. So Extra Life is one of the orgs that'll be our Greatest City Collective's website for the month of May and moving forward from there. And you can find more about them there. You can find links on how to figure out what they're doing over there and check them out in that way. And I think one of the things that I especially loved about this is on Bus Ride Talks and in GCC in general, and why we started this whole thing, was figuring out all of the different ways that people can support nonprofits that they care about, support different things that they want to help with in ways beyond just your dollars. And this is that in motion. So thank you for bringing that to us, and thank you for bringing it to our audience.
Of course. Awesome. Happy to.
Thank you, Sam. It has been amazing to have you. Thank you for being with us. And thank you, because especially this is our last episode of the season. I know, right?
I got to be in the season finale.
You did.
Oh my gosh, I feel so special right now. Thank you for having me. It's truly been a blast. I've had such a great time.
I know. It was so great to have you. And we will definitely be back, and there will be more. But for now, Jake and I are going to do some dreaming, some resting, to see what we will bring to you all next time. And if you have anything or anyone that you want to see, we would love to hear about it. You can hit us up on any of the social medias at Greatest City Co. Or you can email us at thoughts@greatestcitycollective.org. Let us know what you think. Let us know what you liked about the season. Maybe what you didn't like, but be nice about it. And any suggestions, if you want to have somebody, keep it reasonable, y'all. We don't have that much reach. But if you have a reach, let us know, and we will see what we can do. We will see who we bring. But for now, as always, thank you, Sam, again for being here. And thank y'all so much for listening. And we can't wait until we're back.